Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. Today is episode number 185 with Stephen Huber.
And then he was an entrepreneur himself, and sort of his best line I had was, once you get the itch to be an entrepreneur, you might as well scratch it to see if you can do it, because if you don't, you end up in sort of corporate America and don't test it, you'll be really frustrated.
Lots of reasons to listen to today's show. If you're interested in entrepreneurship, we often talk about tech entrepreneurship. Stephen took a different route in two ways. First of all, he's in the healthcare industry. It's not a tech company. It is a labor-intensive company and a great company all the same, but one that we don't hear about as much in popular media. A second thing is that rather than start his own company, he teamed up with a couple of fellow veterans. They found a company that was running well that they thought that they could take to the next level, and they bought it. And so it's an alternate version of entrepreneurship. Again, usually we hear about the startups that are high tech, and that's certainly one path. But Stephen's story illustrates other paths that are just as interesting. He also talks about MBA and the work that he did prior to becoming president of this company and how to evaluate whether or not it's worth it to pursue that higher education or that work experience prior to diving in. We talk about networking and things that are relevant to any career path as well. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes, you'll find the podcasts and links that Stephen recommends, as well as our new coaching element. He talks about coaching and the value of an executive coach. We provide that as well. Certified coaches giving a discount to Beyond the Uniform listeners. So with that, let's dive into my conversation with Stephen. Well, joining me today in Brea, California, just minutes away from where I grew up in Fullerton, California, is Stephen Huber. Stephen, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I want to give listeners a little bit of context about your background. Stephen is the president of Home Care Providers, which is a premier integrated home health care services company in Southern California. Headquartered in Orange County, Home Care Providers provides world-class private duty home care services to seniors throughout the Southern California region. By providing these services, they create a viable alternative to traditional institutionalized care, allowing clients to remain safely in the comfort of their own home. Stephen started out at the Naval Academy, served as a helo pilot for 11 years, 9 on active duty and 2 in the reserve. He also worked as a sales representative, consultant, and contractor, and he holds an MBA from UCLA's Anderson School of Management. So, Stephen, maybe to start out, how would you describe to someone Home Care Providers and the work that you're doing there?
Yeah, perfect. Thanks. Well, first, thanks for having me. This is enjoyable. It'll be fun to sort of open and shed light to the senior care industry, because I didn't know much about it when I started, and the opportunity to sort of support our seniors as they age has been awesome over the last couple of years since we've gotten going. But yeah, you said it, we help provide opportunities for seniors to age in successfully. Very rarely do you meet a senior who's like, I just can't wait to move into that facility. They want to stay at home. They need help as they do that. And so our company is designed to do that. And sort of the 30-second elevator pitch I usually give is we provide medical and non-medical in-home care throughout Southern California to seniors who have chosen that path to stay at home. So that's what we do. The best way to think about it in sort of larger macro terms is I'm really just an employment agency. That's the best way to think about it. Our largest costs are our employees, the payroll. I have to become a master in sort of California wage and hour law, so I make sure I'm paying everyone correctly. But we have a lot of temporary and on-call workers, and our clients are, instead of businesses, just seniors who have decided to stay at home. So when you think about us, we're not really that much different from your standard employment agency. We just have sort of home care and medical issues that we have to worry about when we're providing support. So the fastest way to describe it.
How did you get into this work? I know we were talking just briefly before we started the recording, but how did you come into this?
Sort of by mistake. When I left active duty and I had had some interviews with some large companies sort of in the brand management space and was looking to get into brand management and sort of marketing, And sort of the thought process there was to sort of learn how brands run their businesses and figure out and be sort of a leader of business. And I went on a non-traditional path. And so as I was getting off active duty, those were harder and harder to come by because they typically recruit straight out of the MBA programs and do the internship into an offer in the second year. And I had done my executive MBA. And so I did it while I was on active duty, had some time off, time between finishing business school and when I actually got off active duty. And so I wasn't in that traditional path. And I continued to go through it. But as I was just sort of looking for work and I found jobs in San Diego that kept me there, they just weren't quite right for me. They weren't really kind of along the appropriate lines. And sort of as I got into a position where I was a 1099 doing med device sales, I loved the freedom of that. And I loved the challenge of sort of knowing that I brought home sort of on a day in and day out basis was a result of the hard work put in. But the sales process for med devices is a unique one and didn't really fit with what I wanted from it. And at the same time that was sort of wrapping up, I met a shared colleague, a friend, and ultimately my business partner who was an Able Academy grad. He has his MBA from Stanford, and he was looking at healthcare services as an investment opportunity. And as I was looking for something to do, we sort of got together, we evaluated the market and sort of ultimately pursued the purchase of an organization. And as we did that in Southern California, we ended up finding one in Brea here in North Orange County that we ended up purchasing. So that's by accident, I guess, is the short answer.
And how did you go about purchasing then? Did you have to raise money from outside investors? Was this you and your partner's own money, or how did you do that?
Yeah, so we used our own capital. So we savings that I had and that he had developed from his days in private equity, and then he was an entrepreneur himself. And sort of his best line I had was, once you get the itch to be an entrepreneur, you might as well scratch it to see if you can do it. Because if you don't, you end up in sort of corporate America and don't test it, you'll be really frustrated. So we did it on our own, but really we leveraged his background in private equity to evaluate the industry, evaluate the company, sort of review the ins and outs to make sure the deal was in our best interest to move forward. And so we did it that way. It took us about 6 months. It wasn't a short process, but it was definitely an informative one. And so that was the way we did it. We sort of leveraged his experience.
And how would you describe for someone on active duty? You're the president. And so what does that mean? How would you explain the work you do?
Yeah. So ultimately, I'm responsible for the entire operation of the agency. So everything from sales, marketing, finance, recruiting, providing leadership and strategic direction, it all sort of flows and stops with me. That's probably the most important piece, but understand I'm not a nurse or don't have any kind of clinical background. And so I have to outsource some of that to my team and hire the right people to make sure that they're doing kind of the right things. And so I've gotten really good at learning really quickly. I mean, the Navy certainly taught us that, right? But that's probably the most simplistic way to look at it. Ultimately, I'm sort of responsible for all of that. So obviously I have a bookkeeper, an accountant, a billing payroll specialist, and someone who does staffing and scheduling, and a recruiter. But I also fill in wherever there needs to be fill in because we're short, we're small business. So if I have to step into recruiting, I have to do that. And then my probably predominant role is sales. So I'm sort of ultimately the lead champion for our business and going out in the community and developing relationships and sort of asking for business. We have some sales folks that work for us as well, but that's sort of the most appropriate job description day to day. And then as president, I also have to manage our board of directors, right? I need to make sure they have the resources and information that they need so that they can help me lead the company and provide it with its necessary resources and sort of strategic direction. Because as I said, my business partner's background in private equity, he has a strong finance background and seen companies try and scale and make mistakes. So he can help navigate some of those rocks and and sort of interesting waters, if you will. And then we also have another business partner whose expertise is in marketing and SEO, and so he can provide us with expertise in that realm, and all of a sudden we've got kind of a really nice tier of people who sort of each have their subject matter expertise that we can leverage throughout. So I look at my job managing down and sort of up and across when I'm helping the board.
Could you break that down? I know one of the audience's favorite question is just kind of the granular details, especially if you're able to kind of like timestamp it of, you know, when you start and just kind of throughout the day, what's going on. But I think it gives a sense of what your actual life looks like. And of course, especially sure. in entrepreneurship, I'm sure no day is the same, but if you could just maybe abstract out a representative day and walk us through it.
Sure, you're right. No day is the same. I would say my week is more typical. I typically work in San Diego on Tuesdays and Fridays, which means I commute because I live in San Diego but run a business 100 miles from my home. And so I commute up and back on Mondays typically. There are a number of sales calls to make and sort of networking meetings that occur. On a Monday, we have our staff meeting. And then Tuesday is usually kind of San Diego focused, maybe a little some sales calls, some other things. And then today is probably a good example. I started my day in San Diego very early, left for an 8 o'clock show in Irvine for a networking educational event. That was an hour and a half on sort of dementia and driving for seniors, which is sort of right in line with what our clients ask us about and how to navigate that conversation. Came up to my office, did some management of the team and met with individuals, looked at sort of our financials and where we stand in terms of what came in cash, because we have payroll every Friday, so we've got to have enough in the bank to make our payroll bill on Thursdays. So that's always a challenge. And then after that, went out, met with a client, took our new nurse who just joined the team out to meet with him and provide sort of customer service, maybe a few sales calls. Now it's sort of late in the evening, and after this, we'll head to dinner with a colleague who has been in Orange County for a long time and sort of just see if there's any way to leverage her relationships with the community for our sort of corporate benefit, our company's benefit. So it'll probably end up being 12, 13-hour day, and I probably didn't get away from my desk nearly as much as I needed to drive the business forward, but the things I did today sort of helped. And then tomorrow it's much the same, and I'll be back down in San Diego on Friday to help guide San Diego's operations.
And you've been at it at this point for almost 3 years. Is what you just described, has it been consistently like that for the last 3 years? Was it worse at the beginning, better at the beginning? How has it changed over time?
So it was worse in the beginning because our sole operational area was Orange County. And so for the first sort of year and a half, my sort of sole focus was Orange County. We didn't have San Diego operations and we didn't have any employees down there. And we were trying, I mean, we would occasionally, because I've lived there and my business partners both live in San Diego, we have a lot of friends that live down there, obviously. And so they would occasionally be like, oh, you're in home care. Would you be able to talk to my, I don't know, you name it, in-law, mother, father, friend about home care and potentially set up services for them, which we would try and do. And we did that for a little while, and then we've expanded to include our full operations in San Diego. So initially, before we had that, I was probably spending 2 or 3 nights a week in Orange County, and now I'm only really spending 1 night away. But I'm able to still be up here 3 days a week because of my schedule or my ability to commute sort of when there isn't a lot of traffic, I guess, as I would say. So I got to kind of pick my spots to get up here. But it's only about 90 minutes, and I can usually make some stops along the way that are of value to the team and the organization. And so it was worse in the beginning. It's gotten a lot better as a result of opening up San Diego because I can be as effective down there as I am up here. But there's still nothing like being present and walking through the various referral partners or referral sources where we're trying to get business. You need to be in them and walking through them on a weekly basis. So it's still a fun process and a lot of time and spent away and on the road. So that's sort of it's been getting better.
You mentioned earlier when you were talking about your day, you mentioned networking a couple of times. And what would you I want to dive into this a little bit because I think that it's so important. And I also feel like a lot of the people in the military I speak with have an aversion to networking. And so how would you explain networking and how do you approach it in a way that feels authentic to you and good rather than this perception of slimy or salesy or whatever this adverse reaction people have to it is?
Sure. So it's networking kind of, but really I don't have enough time to sort of do the like grab and grins at the bars all the time and to do the sort of Chamber of Commerce events. And I don't mean to slander the chambers. They're usually really good. But what I've sort of chosen to do over time is engage with organizations and events that have an educational focus. And so what you end up finding when you do that, especially when you enter into a new sort of domain or industry like I did, is it's really helpful because a lot of times the people that are there are interested, they want to learn, and they're all sort of like-minded and they're all generally kind of focused on the same general issues. So for example, today's was focused largely run by a woman whose organization focuses on Alzheimer's and dementia. So it usually slants towards the cognitive issues, which certainly a portion of our clients are afflicted by. And then other days I'll be going to a senior collaborative group that has probably 25 or 30 members that represent a variety of different industries and aspects of the senior care space. And so that allows me sort of beneficial referrals in both directions. So we'll have clients who are no longer appropriate for our services, either because of financial reasons or our care really isn't designed for what they now are sort of dealing with. And so maybe a placement into a board and care or assisted living facility is appropriate. And I don't know all of the different places in Orange County, so it's helpful to know three or four people who are more knowledgeable in that area of the senior care continuum. And so knowing them and networking and getting to know them over the years has certainly paid us dividends because they'll call us and ask, because I've been in the event, in those meetings or contribute to those groups in some way, if we can provide care to a loved one or someone they know or simply a client of theirs. And so that sort of networking is more a function of rounding out the people that I know so that I can provide a better level of care and service to our client base.
You know, so as you took us through your day, I'm cognizant of how many different skill sets you have to leverage in terms of leading and the operation component you spoke about, you know, really being able to run the finances of having a labor-intensive business, but you've also got the sales, and you just got so many different facets to your job. And I'm curious if you feel like you could have done this directly from active duty, or if the MBA or sales and consulting work you did was essential for this path?
So I don't know that the sales and, well, I probably couldn't have done it straight out of the military. It certainly can. I mean, there's nothing that says I need an MBA to do what I do. But I think the MBA taught us a lot of essential aspects of business that we're just not a part of our routine in the Navy. And I did a lot of the operation stuff and some of the planning for pilot production as an FRS instructor. So when I was teaching winged aviators to fly their, ultimately their fleet airplane, I was responsible for pilot production and anticipating kind of the 10 or so squadrons we supplied pilots with, how many pilots they were going to need over the next, and aircrew over the next sort of 5 years or so, and feeding that all the way back to the sort of ascension target. And interestingly, I finally realized like how I got selected for a pilot, because basically they said on sort of at our graduation, they're going to need one pilot to go into this squadron in 36 months. And that guy was me, right? So they basically knew we need this many new pilots in order with washouts and drops to get there. So business-related issues I sort of was aware of, and certainly the MBA sort of informed the financials and the operations and the marketing. What I think Anderson does really well, speaking specifically about our program at UCLA, was they have a strategic market research project, or in the other programs, not the executive MBA, they call it something slightly different, but effectively it's a consulting project focused on a real company with real problems and real challenges that they need expertise to help with. And mine was happened to be a meat company in Spain, and they were in a dynamic where they were trying to figure out how do we take a premium product that's sort of white labeled at the grocery store and make it a premium product we can charge a premium price for, because it was a really good quality product. And so we were looking at operations and finance and marketing and sort of alternative channels to apply to that. And through that process, you get to see how operations and marketing will affect your bottom line, and how to put all those pieces together so that you could provide a recommendation. And certainly when I'm sitting at my desk here, I'm doing all that same stuff. I'm worried about our recruiting budget and how it's going to impact, I mean, just the dominoes that fall. So I don't think I could have done it directly. It certainly helped to have the MBA under my belt and get going with that. And I sort of suspected that, or intuitively knew that, because it's part of the why I was looking at those brand management jobs, because they were the fastest way I could think of learning how to run a business and get some training along the way. I just did it a slightly different way.
And I'm also interested in learning. So when I had reached out to you to interview you, one of the things, you know, you're unique of the 180 interviews I've done, and that you're in what LinkedIn would classify as hospital and healthcare as an industry. And so it's entrepreneurship, but it's not like tech, which is always right in the forefront of the news. So I think it's like very cool mm-hmm. as an example of that. But I didn't realize until we were chatting before the call that it wasn't it wasn't entrepreneurship through just coming up with a crazy idea and running with it. It was through finding an existing business that you could purchase and then operate more efficiently. And I'm curious,
and scale.
Yep. And I'm just kind of, obviously you've only had experience in that one way, but for someone who's listening, who's interested in entrepreneurship, what advice would you have to give to them about that decision between starting for something from scratch versus finding a good opportunity that you could scale?
We've opened a new office in San Diego. So we're effectively trying to build it from scratch down in a new industry, because it's service related, our employees won't drive more than 5 or 10 miles at times to go and fill a client requirement. So anytime I add a client, even in Orange County, in LA County, it's kind of it can be tough if we don't have somebody kind of co-located in terms of employee near the new client. So we have to have those two, sales and recruiting, really aligned. So it's a lot easier to have sort of buffer between 0 and 100, right, than just being at 0 and trying to add to 1. So, if you go from 0 to 1, it's sort of an infinite growth, right? But if I go from 100 to 101, it's only a 1% growth. And so it's a lot easier to do it in Orange County, where we had a going business. One of the big failings of business school that I experienced, and I was just chatting about this with the woman who was our admissions director when I went through and I was back on campus last week or so for a healthcare event, was I think business school, the one sort of fallacy it has about entrepreneurship is that they do focus on the Facebooks and the Ubers of the world and the unicorns, rather than the idea that there are 100 really good businesses with a lot of really good, solid economics out there. Small business is a wonderful way to pursue that entrepreneurial venture and to get in and understand it. And I was able to learn a lot in the first year and a half, 2 years, and still sort of learning every day. But it does give you a little bit of margin for error when you assume a business that already has some clients, some revenue, and some goodwill. One of the discussions we had, my business partner and I, when we started, was if we have sort of X amount of money to invest and purchase, what if we just turn that money into an opportunity to grow our business from scratch? Do we think we would be able to sort of achieve the same results? I don't know. I think it would have been really, really hard because it would have been a new business with no background, no goodwill assumed, no contracts in place, all of those things that we acquired, and we really have a platform that we can then leverage to grow. It's not easy. It's still a struggle every day. It's still a learning curve, and we're still sort of trying to figure it all out 2.5 years in because the founder had 25 years of experience, and so we're still newbies at this, right? We're still trying to figure it out and learning every day to make it better and sort of iterate a better process. So that's the answer to the question on which is better. I think it's harder to do it from scratch, but I think there are values to doing both. And
do you have any thoughts? So you have one business partner or two?
Two others that are sort of on board, yeah.
So do you have any advice on how to approach that partnership decision? First of all, whether or not to have a partner, and then second of all, how to try to vet whether or not you would make a good partnership?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I'm sure he'll listen to this, so I've got to make sure I watch my words carefully. No, all kidding aside there, I mean, look, we have very similar backgrounds. He graduated from the Naval Academy in 98. I started in July of 98, or we started June of 98. So our time at Annapolis, we missed each other by like 31 days, right? And so we had a lot of shared common connections. We had a background that was very similar. He served in the SEAL teams and then went to business school. He stayed in private equity for a few years, built a company. So he had a lot of experience in that area and realm of business. And then I was going to be the operational day-to-day leader of the business. And our sort of agreement was that's my area to run, and he would help me in any way he could, particularly on the financial side, sort of understanding how to avoid some of those pitfalls. And then sort of the last partner was added about a year ago with SEO experience, because that was an area that my sort of original business partner and I didn't really have the expertise in. And through his network, we were able to add that component. And then I think sort of ultimately, because our areas of expertise as it pertains to running home care providers are sufficiently unique that we each have our own domain and allows us to be subject matter experts. And where it sort of falls into that person's domain, we sort of have a conversation and we push the bounds and we make sure we're making a sound decision for the business and then its survival. Because at the end of the day, sort of, I would say about 100 people rely on our services on a regular basis. And an equal number of people right now rely on our paycheck. And so when you think about it that way, we're affecting kind of people's lives every day as California becomes more expensive to live in. We've got to make sure that the business survives. And so every discussion that we have, sort of we try and leverage each other's greater strengths to make the best decision we can for the business. And very rarely do egos get in the way, because sort of our background is sort of may allow us to have one, but sort of I think the Navy does a good job of beating that ego out of us, and we just become we think what we're doing is normal, and at times feels that way because of the company we keep. But in reality, we've done some pretty crazy things along the way. You driving submarines, flying helicopters, him as a SEAL, and it sort of, we think it's normal, but in reality, it's far from it. And so we work well as a group.
Just out of curiosity, who is your partner from the GSB?
Brandon Roach. He was
graduated
in 05.
Yeah. He was a little bit before me. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What about any thoughts on, because you're a senior leader in a sizable company? I mean, it's I think nearly 50 employees. How have you found that leadership? And you've spoken a little bit to this, but like how does leadership compare outside, running this company versus while you were in the military?
Yeah, so to clarify a little bit the numbers, it's fun. Most of my employees are part-time, temporary, and on-call, and so the numbers skew a lot in that direction. My actual office staff and the people that sort of directly report to me on a day-to-day basis is about six. It's sort of the comparison to the military. It's sort of like, I never did it, so sort of my old bosses may cringe when I say it, but it is sort of a department head job, CEO job, in the sense that when you think about the commanding officer responsible for sort of in a squadron, at least the ones that I supported, he's responsible for maintenance, operations, safety, admin. All of those departments have individuals who then sort of dive deep into what's going on. That's probably the most equivalent, easily understood active duty equivalent, but it goes a lot further than that because the nuances of managing a staff outside of the Navy is a little bit different. People can up and quit on you. And I know I was managing a temporary staff as an operations manager for a financial services company in San Diego. And I literally had someone walk up to me at 2 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon and tell me that their last day would be at 3:30. And so they just sort of walked off the job and you're like, well, okay. And similarly, as an at-will employee here, my team has the absolute right to do the same thing. Obviously, hopefully we treat them better than that, that they don't give me an hour and a half notice, but it does happen. And so you have to be sort of prepared to roll with that. Where in the military, you're not necessarily as concerned that someone's going to just sort of up and take off on you. You have a little bit more time and leeway there. So I think that's been sort of one of the biggest lessons learned, but you got to make sure you fill it with the right types of people who are sort of driven to the same mission and the same goal set that we have. And sort of, it's been an iterative process to find the right people for the job. And it takes time. So we've got to go forward. And then I think the Navy taught us well to take kind of decisive action and just sort of, you need to learn how to do the job. You need to fill it in. And if you'll be okay working with imperfect information. But I think you got to just be ready to roll with that. And leadership sort of, but managing people generally isn't any different. You know, I don't treat my employees here any different than I treated the sailors that I led really any differently on an individual level. It's just a different work environment, I guess.
And I'm taking a step back to think of all of the things that you've had to learn about. It's like the industry knowledge and then running the company. I can only imagine how intensive a 3-year period it's been of just, I think there's something about starting a company where you're building it from the ground up. And so even if the foundation is pretty poor, you're building everything, but it just seems so intimidating to come into a company that's running and having to learn all the nuances and take over for someone who founded it and has probably been running it for 20 or 30 years. And so I just have a lot of appreciation for, it's like a used car where you're coming in and you're having to acquaint yourself with every little last piece and then figure out of 1,000 things to focus on, what's the 2 or 3 things that are going to move the needle for you as a business. And that's, I can imagine that's exceptionally difficult.
So yeah, it is. I go back to my business Brandon's sort of background in private equity. And one of the terms that we threw into our sort of LOA, or letter of intent LOI was key man theory. It was a key man clause. So if sort of certain individuals left the company before the close or gave notice before closure, we could walk away free and clear. And there were no issues there. We did have one former employee give notice 2 days before close. So we came up on the Thursday before closing just to make sure sort of everything was still running smoothly. And one of the individuals that worked here gave notice. And so we had to get together and decide, did that person that departed the organization or give notice constitute one of the key men that we couldn't continue to provide service without their knowledge? We ultimately decided that wasn't the case, but I will tell you that there are two people who work for me now who have been with me since the beginning that if had either one of them walked, we would have had given notice. We probably would have walked away from the deal because the two of them run my books, and they help me with billing, payroll, and staffing, have been with me through the ups and downs of it. To them, I owe a debt of gratitude, not easily repaid, but they're really, and at times, the only reason it has been able to continue, because I'm taking over an airplane that's sort of flying and hurtling at the ground. We're trying to figure out how to sort of make correct it so we don't crash. And it's not always easy. And so you're really learning on the fly. And I think we learned through the Naval Academy, service academies in general, and then when I went through flight school, how to do that. But it's still, when you have this many lives at stake and that many salaries and people who count on you, it takes on a different meaning than when we were getting trained and sort of it crawl, walk, run in the military. It was run the moment we took over. And so it's been at times very, very stressful. I don't know that I did it fast enough, but a good friend of mine in San Diego, his mother is a home care client. So he's experienced that side of it. His brother actually owns a home care agency in another Western state. So we'll never be competitors, but he has also sat in my chair at a variety of different types of companies. And now runs a executive coaching business. And so I engaged with him about 6 months ago to really help me figure out how to do this. And that has been sort of, at the end of the day, somewhat instrumental as well, because he's rounding out those things where I may have made some pretty critical mistakes along the way. None of them fatal, but they certainly, it's helpful to have a sounding board. And when I need to sort of relay an important message, someone to review that and make sure that what I'm intending to say is going to be conveyed. And with that, because we have a long-standing prior relationship, our kids, our oldest children, our classmates in school, has provided a measure of trust that I can go to him with a lot of these issues that maybe I wouldn't go to anybody else with, and he can kind of give me the unvarnished, whoa, stop, Steven, you did what? you need to take a step back, and this is how we're going to unscrew the mess you created first, and then we're going to sort of find a solution that works for everyone. So that's been sort of the way I've survived. I came to the executive coach way too late. I should have done it probably 6 months into it. But I mean, you live and you learn. So
I appreciate a couple things about your story. First of all, I love that you partnered up with Brandon and your other partner. You had on paper it seems perfect. You had the common language of service academy and military service, so a lot of shared values, a lot of shared experiences, and then diversity in background, where you had, you know, kind of sales and consulting, and he had private equity. So that's yeah. Really cool to see from a distance is the overlap of values, but the lack of overlap in skill set. So I appreciate that with your story, but I'm also yeah. appreciating the just the way in which it seems like you've gotten good mentors and advisors around you and people to be able to help you along the way. And I'm a very, very big fan of executive coaching and just coaching in general. We actually have a new component of Beyond the Uniform about that.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a very valuable thing. So I like how you've done that. And that led into one of the other questions I had, which is you know, what resources have helped you in your civilian career that you would recommend to listeners? And that could be books or websites or podcasts or conferences, but anything that just kind of helped you or continues to help you in entrepreneurship and running a company and in this industry that people should check out.
Yeah, I think, I've taken all of the personality assessments out there, DISC and Gallup. I think I took Myers-Briggs at one point. And I took, I didn't even remember. We took one at business school. I don't even remember what it was. But one of the things that Josh, my coach and good friend, suggested was Gallup strengths. And the reason that he suggested that is the sort of when you start talking about your sort of top five strengths, they come in words that everybody sort of understands, right? I mean, everyone sort of understands learner and strategic and ideator. And if you kind of know the general term, you can start to pinpoint where that person falls. and how maybe best to utilize their strengths so that they do their best work. So that's one. Sort of Gallup is a great one. It's a good piece. I think the best one that I, and so that sort of answers, finalizes the coaching piece. So it gives us a common language on that one. But Toastmasters, I think, is the number one thing I would recommend. Someone who's on shore duty, has a little bit of flexibility in their schedules, find a Toastmasters club that you really like to go to with a good group of guys, members, men or women, it doesn't matter. Mine happens to be an all-men's club in San Diego, but there are good ones throughout San Diego and throughout the country, really. What that's afforded me is an opportunity to really practice and hone the presentation skills. I didn't lack for confidence getting up in front of a group of people, and that really got beaten into me, both Naval Academy and then in sort of aviation in general. But the ability to refine and improve my speaking through Toastmasters has been instrumental. So that's sort of my first resource. I mean, just Toastmasters International, and you can find a club nearby you. One recommendation there is find a morning club. They tend to have better consistent participation in my view, because people can generally start work half an hour early, but it's very difficult to get out of work half an hour early, especially if you're under the gun. So we meet on a weekly basis. That's been really helpful. A podcast that I like, two of them, Tim Ferriss. I made the mistake when we were looking at the business. I said, if we're successful, and Brandon very quickly was like, no, we don't use if in this business. We use when. And he gave me Tim Ferriss and Chris Sacco. I'm sure I'm pronouncing his name incorrectly, but he is probably one of the most successful venture capitalists. Those unicorns we mentioned, sort of that business school focus on, he's invested in almost all of them. They have a really good conversation about sort of investment philosophy and how to gauge whether or not what they're about to get into is worth participating in. So that was a really good one. And lastly, sort of for the transitioning veteran, or really anybody who's looking for manager tools, it's two West Point guys. Love them every day, but a December Saturday. They run a website with a free podcast. Manager Tools is one of their podcasts, and Career Tools is their other. And it really focuses, as you can imagine, Manager Tools on the daily grind of being a manager, how to better manage your team. I don't think I live up to what they're doing every day, probably because I hold myself to a pretty high standard, which is fine. But if you strive for it, you can do it. But they have everything from sort of how to lead your team, how to develop them, how to coach them, how to mentor them, how to provide feedback. It's timeless advice on that side of it, as well as on career tools. So how to write a resume, how to dress for an interview, how to think about your career, how to manage your boss, and how to talk to them and do those types of things. So those are sort of three pretty good resources that I can think of off the top of my head.
That's great. And for listeners, in the show notes at beyonduniform.io, I'll have links to DISC and Gallup Strengths Finders, Myers-Briggs, Toastmasters. I'll find that Tim Ferriss episode and then Manager Tools podcast as well. Well, I always like to leave the last question open-ended, which is, you know, Stephen, you've covered a lot of ground about entrepreneurship, about leadership, about MBAs. We've covered a lot of ground, but I'm sure there's things that you would like to share that I haven't asked about. And so wanted to just give you space. If there's anything that's present that we haven't covered that you want to share with listeners, would love to hear it.
Yeah, sure. Well, first, thanks for having me. This was fun. Sort of took me back to when we started this journey almost 3.5 years ago. Interestingly, kind of fun aside, the first day we visited the business here was my birthday. So I don't know if that was fortuitous or telling, but I keep remembering that every time my birthday rolls around in August, that the first time we sat down to evaluate the business was on my birthday. So that was kind of a fun aside. I would share that the transition is a hard one. I found it to be challenging because I did come off of a business school at a unique time, and I still had active duty commitments. So my transition was difficult, and trust in the process, it can work. It took me a while to really find my groove. Still working on it as an entrepreneur, so I'm not sure I'm quite there yet, but definitely working on it. Brandon and I met because of a Service Academy networking event. They're all over the place. There is not, when I was networking for Job and Justin, I don't know if you had the same experience, but if I wanted to and needed a connection to a Service Academy alum, almost every single one of them was willing to chat with me.
Yep.
For some period of time, 15, 20 minutes. It didn't matter where we went, West Point, Navy, Coast Guard, everybody picked up the phone. It was a network. You basically, for the price of one, you get all four. Everybody wants to help you. That piece is absolutely true. And generally veterans as well. I mean, I think it doesn't really matter. People will pick up and help one another. And then in Orange County, there's a pretty established one, but I would imagine sort of throughout there are veterans, organizations and groups that get together for beers and communicate about how to help veterans who are in transition. They exist probably in every major city. Find those, hunt those out. There's a good group of people who have a varied, storied post-military career that will enable you to get in. And generally, because they're in the area, they know a lot of people that are outside of the veteran community who are still trying to help in some way or may know of a job that's out there. And then the last piece of advice, I think a lot of times people look at the Procters and Gambles, the GEs of the world, because they know of them, the Apples, they know of those companies. But in the 100 miles between my office and home, there are 1,000 great companies that I've never heard of that would be great places to work. I like to think home care providers is one of those places. No one would know of us necessarily or know that we're looking for a job unless they're networking or connecting with somebody. And that kind of activity, you can really only find those jobs. The last piece is I'm an endemic. When I was in credit collections and I was in financial services, that was what we were doing. That market was shrinking when I was in it. I mean, it's just becoming very highly regulated and it's becoming a lot harder and harder to operate. So margins are getting squeezed. I ended up in home care in an industry where the demographics are behind us, the sort of winds at our backs. And as long as we don't make those critical mistakes, we'll be able to grow. And I think if you're transitioning, look for those kinds of dynamics in a market you want to go into so that you can start a career in something that has legs and can grow with you as you expand. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in a really tight pool trying to move up when maybe the external market, independent of how well you're performing, is sort of prohibiting you from growing at times. I'd say those are probably the few things that I've sort of figured out or learned or been sort of told over time over the last sort of 5-6 years as I've been sort of in this sort of process. So, yeah.
That's all great. And I love that plug. I think it's, you know, I think even 10 years out of the military, it's easy to know the biggest companies and the companies you hear about. And doing a lot of sales outreach myself, you just start to realize there are hundreds of thousands of incredible companies out there. And I like that thought of using networks to identify what might be the best fit for you, and that you know the big company may be a great fit for you, but it's like it's almost like going out dating and only having pictures of celebrities rather than like, okay, maybe that's not the right person for you. It's like there's, you know, lots of different varieties out there. And I plus yeah. one your thought on you know that, you know, for listeners to know that people are busy and so everyone flakes on email, but for the most part, any other military veteran wants to help you. And I think that you'll find that they're very responsive to try to do whatever it is to help you when you're looking for that job.
Yeah, and I think, if someone's interested in getting into a specific industry, I mean, I didn't know about senior home care really when I started at this, right? The reason we got into it is because the demographics and the dynamics of the market are really attractive. But I mean, just think about how many parts and pieces go into sort of an automobile in the car you drive and how many suppliers that is. I mean, you don't even know, like you probably only know like a quarter of the people, and you only really know the company on the front sort of hood, but the seatbelt is made by a different company than the steering column, right? And so all of a sudden you're talking about hundreds of companies, some of them which are tiny and would be fantastic places to grow and develop. And they're out there. You won't know until you start looking and go. And you might be making those parts, pieces, and selling them. So yeah, and there are veterans in every line of work, almost every company. You'll find somebody who can help you if you're looking hard enough, or asking the right questions and moving through that process. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, I know you've got long days and long weeks, so I appreciate your taking time out of your schedule to speak with me, and it's great hearing your story.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next week with more interviews. If you have any feedback, shoot it to me at justin@beyonduniform.io. And if you're enjoying the show, three ways to support is, first of all, tell a friend, help us get word out to more veterans who would benefit from this. Second of all, sponsorship, looking for companies that are trying to get in front of active duty military members thinking of transitioning, and hoping to subsidize the cost of the show through sponsors. If you know of a company, send them my way. Third, there's a donate button on the website. Donations greatly appreciated. Have a great week. I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.